there was this moment where he was able to draw a very diverse kind of group of support who were interested in listening to what he had to say. And we don't see that very often anymore because there's such a partisan divide.
That's Ellen Meacham, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Ellen Meacham has been a journalist for more than 20 years. Her work has appeared in the New York Times and many other places. She teaches journalism at the University of Mississippi. She joins us to talk about her book, Delta Epiphany, Robert F. Kennedy in Mississippi. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm so glad to be here.
Set the stage for us. Why did Senator Robert Kennedy visit the Mississippi Delta on April 10th, 1967?
Well, he went as part of a Senate subcommittee that he was serving on that was looking at some war on poverty programs. So the first day he was in Mississippi, he had hearings in Jackson. And the second day, they chartered a plane, and he and another senator and a lot of the press flew the little distance over to Greenville, Mississippi, and drove up through the Delta, which is in the northwest part of the state, primarily agricultural region, even today.
So when Kennedy went there, and historians talk about this, usually they just concentrate on Kennedy and don't look at the bigger picture, but you are telling a wider story here. Why was that so important for you to do?
Well, it was really important to me to pull the folks that had been part of the story that he encountered that had such a big impact on him as he went into their homes and talked about how they fed their children and asked questions and saw their children. It was very important for me to tell the other half of the story. I didn't just want to write a story about, you know, St. Kennedy goes to Mississippi. He was a real person with, you know, flaws and good qualities, and these were real people that he met. When I first started researching it, I first got interested in Kennedy because of this moment that everyone described, and it just kind of stuck with me. But really soon after that, I decided there is more to this story because these people have been more like a poverty state. Set. They were just kind of the background for him as the main actor. So I felt like their stories were heroic in a way, as I found, you know, just the very efforts they had to put into survival and to caring for their children were often heroic, at least in my book. So that's why I wanted to tell a fuller story. And I don't think you can really understand the impact that it had on him unless you really delve into what he was actually seeing and what was the context of the times and what was life like for those people.
Well, we'll learn more about the people you connected with as you were researching your book, but you talked about the impact this had on Kennedy. Kennedy expressed dismay about what he'd accomplished in his lifetime after visiting the Delta. What did he experience during that really brief visit that had such a profound impact on him?
Well, it was such an intense kind of 48 hours. I think, first of all, he came face to face with the children, and some children, which really, you know, he had a real connection with children. He had 10 of his own at the time. He was 7 of 9 children. And I think it became, rather than the abstract idea of poverty, which is kind of a moving target and means something slightly different to everyone, I think he saw hunger and sort of destitution. And he saw, you know, he asked the moms, like, what do they have for lunch? And she's like, I didn't give them lunch. I can only feed them 2 meals a day. And so just hearing that and seeing their little faces, I think that was made it very real and very concrete to him. He had an interest in poverty before, so it's not like it just completely changed him to someone who's uninterested to interested, but I think he saw also the intersection of the devastating impact of Jim Crow when these children's parents had no access to the voting booth and to the kind of power they ought to have in a democracy and that they were entitled to as citizens, to elect people who might make their lives a little better. And so I think that he was also very powerfully affected by the idea that some of the decisions he had made as Attorney General, perhaps, and he had to make complicated political choices, didn't just mean people couldn't vote. It meant children went hungry in the Mississippi Delta. I'm not sure what he meant by that comment, everything I've done is worthless. That was one of the questions I set out to answer. But I think that he saw things in a very real way, and he couldn't shake it once he'd seen it. He just couldn't shake what he had seen.
So how do you think this experience helped shape him as a leader?
I think it gave him a more of a sense of urgency. And I think he's told a reporter that he had seen worse poverty outside of this country, but he hadn't seen it inside this country. So I think it was kind of in stark contrast to the kind of prosperity that so much of post-war America and American culture, you just didn't see a lot about poverty. And one of the things his trip did was kind of change that conversation and focus on hunger. And CBS did their Hunger in America. There was a lot more reporting on it. But once he saw this destitution, people who couldn't even afford to buy the food, the new food stamps that had come in from the war on poverty, who had no income because of a lot of rapid changes and mechanization and some other things, then I think he started seeing it elsewhere. Then they went to Kentucky and Indian reservations and other places, and he started becoming very aware of the urgency of the problem. The other thing was that I think he felt like it ought to be a pretty simple thing to fix. It was just part of our American commitment to our fellow Americans. While he's not naive, I think he was surprised at the level of resistance he met in Washington. I think he felt like that, this was an emergency. Children are hungry. We need to feed them. And it didn't unfold nearly as easily to try to change the policy. It took almost a year to get any quote unquote emergency food aid to the Delta after he saw those children. So I think that he started becoming aware of sort of the intersection that the funding of Vietnam was often held by Southern lawmakers, senators and congressmen. And so the administration could only push so far. The Vietnam War was getting more expensive. The cities, there were a lot of the people who were displaced in the Delta and other parts of the country moving to the cities, but they had not been provided with any kind of education in the state. And that I think he also just thought, what's going to happen to these children? He said, what's going to happen to them in 20 years? Where are they going to be? And I think he just grew concerned and had more of a sense of urgency about it.
Do you think his visit to the Mississippi Delta influenced his decision to run for president?
Well, I think Vietnam was still the huge weight on that scale. But I think the urgency that he felt and the frustration he felt trying to get aid to Mississippi, and then as he saw it in eastern Kentucky and other poor parts of the nation and in California, I think that he didn't have a lot of faith in the people who were running to want to address those problems. And I think it was kind of a catalyst, I guess you could say. It's like one more little weight that helps to tilt the scale. What happened in Vietnam and how he felt about the Vietnam War was a huge part of it. And I think this was, just another straw that pushed him towards that, because he was, he didn't want to wait another 4 years to try to address a need he thought needed to be addressed.
Well, you pointed out that one of the obstacles he was up against was the cost of the Vietnam War, but clearly racism played a large role in the opposition he ran up against as well.
Absolutely. The leaders in Mississippi ran the gamut from a kind of paternalism that they thought was benign but was not at all benign to just out-and-out racist hatred, pretty much. There was just no idea that the government or anything that the leadership of the state or the government in Washington existed to help people. These particular people, these African Americans of a different color, and it didn't exist to help them in this kind of way at all or help them at all. I think they just felt like that they were not their constituents at all. They didn't see them as citizens. They didn't see them as fully human in many cases. And so obviously they made decisions that they thought were quote unquote what was best for them, but it was never in a dialogue or with the kind of input. But, I don't want to give the impression that the African Americans in the story or in Mississippi were just sort of these passive victims. They were all working very hard. There were so many people on the ground who were trying to make choices in their own lives and have agency in their own life and trying to make waves and participate in civil rights and start voting and start pressing for their rights as citizens. So there was just a lot of sort of ferment going on. You'd had so many murders in Mississippi, you know, in the few years before Kennedy. They handed him two different places during the 48 hours here. He got literature that said Bobby Kennedy will be killed, or hate. Somebody handed him some hate literature that was distributed. And so it was an intense kind of 48 hours or so for him.
As you researched this book, you were able to find and connect with some of the people who met Bobby Kennedy during that visit when they were children. Tell us about them.
Oh, right. Well, that, you know, in some ways was the funnest part of the story, because I think I always wanted to be Nancy Drew when I was growing up. And so I just sort of set myself this task, which seemed almost an impossible task, because once I read the scene, you know, and I'm in outside of Oxford, Mississippi, so I guess I'm required to quote William Faulkner, but he says, you know, every story starts with a memory or an image. So this image of Bobby Kennedy on the floor with this toddler trying to get a response from him and trying to coax him, you know, into responding, and watching him pick up crumbs off the floor there in the shack in Cleveland, Mississippi. That image stuck with me. So I want to know what happened with Kennedy, but the next thing I wanted to know was what happened to that baby. And so it took me 7 years, but I did find the man that was that child and the family, his brothers and sisters, and they were just wonderful. The White family, Miss Annie White, and I always want to say her name. And then there's also Charlie Dillard, who was the grandson of Miss Fanny Dillard. And because in a lot of the contemporary news articles that I read, they weren't even, you know, they didn't even have names. They were just called a Negro woman, which is how they referred to him at the time, or a Negro man. But there were a few reporters who did report their names. And once I had the names, I started searching for them. So they all told a slightly different story about the Delta and about the fortunes of that area and the fortunes of African Americans in the last 50 years. And I really felt like they gave a very sort of child's eye view and intimate going on what was like living in those cabins before Kennedy came and then after.
There's so much more in this book that we don't have time to cover, but what do you think was the legacy of Bobby Kennedy's visit back in 1967?
Well, I do think for a time he was able to shift the conversation from sort of generic poverty, what are we going to do with it, about it, to hunger and hungry children. I think that he responded in an authentic way, and I think part of what he had experienced in his life, the assassination of his brother and the things he had to learn, hard lessons as he was trying to handle civil rights as an attorney general. I think that he moved the conversation, and it's hard to draw like a direct line. He went to Mississippi and this policy happened, but there was the Senate Select Committee on Hunger that was formed, that was quite active, and even President Nixon and some of the, there was a, so they commissioned, first thing they did was commission a national survey, nutritional survey, which had never been done, and found that there were quite a few children who were getting inadequate nutrition. And at that time, the local districts could opt out of the school lunch program. And so they started working on things like that, started working on WIC came about. And so he started a conversation that he didn't get to finish, I guess I would say.
What do you want readers to understand about this moment in history?
That's a great question. First of all, I wanted to tell a story. I just thought it was a really compelling story of someone who was experiencing things authentically. Like, I think he had been through enough that he was curious and he was open to learning more, and he responded to humans as humans by this time in his life. And so I think I want people to understand that here was a real person going to see real people who had authentic and life experiences that we can learn from, and we can learn about the struggles of poor even today. There's still plenty of hunger in just about every county in America. I think I also want people to understand that it was a very complex time, and that there was this moment where he was able to draw a very diverse kind of group of support who were interested in listening to what he had to say. And we don't see that very often anymore because there's such a partisan divide. So I think that's what I would like people to get from the book.
Ellen, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you. I've had a great time.
Ellen Meacham's book is Delta Epiphany, Robert F. Kennedy in Mississippi. You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. On Facebook, you'll find us at KPR Conversations, that's all one word, and you can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.